This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us on this Saturday morning. Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Saturday mornings between 11 and noon here on News Radio, 830 WCCO. Typically, Tom Scheuer is our host. Tom is away today. I'll be visiting with Brian Grogan from Moss and Barnett's Communications Law Practice Group to discuss the FCC and what we can hear on the radio, what we can see on over-the-air television, and the impact it could have going forward. Brian, always great to see you.
Great to see you, Steve.
Thanks for coming in today. This is a topic that we visit about from time to time, and it always is timely because things have really changed in our business, radio, television. When I first got started, it was pretty clear what you could and couldn't do. And to a certain extent, it's still pretty clear what you can and can't say in the public radio or public airwaves. But that could be changing.
Right. You know, I think you're right. Historically, especially if you go back to like 1975, the FCC put in place rules. And it actually related back to Carlin's seven dirty words.
Right.
He went on the air. He used his seven dirty words. He got slapped down for that. And from that point forward, for the next almost 30 years, the FCC said, as long as you don't use those seven words, you're fine. And so it gave clarity to guys like you. You're on the radio. You know exactly what your guests can and can't say. You beep them out if they say the wrong word. But then in 2000, the FCC, you know, under that administration, changed the rules a little bit. And they started to say, well, now if you ponder on a thought too long, you know, if you talk about a topic too much with the idea that you might try to titillate the audience, or if you're showing on a public broadcast an image of somebody too long, or from what we believe to be, you know, indecent, basically, we're now going to slap fines on you. We could revoke your license. We could do all kinds of things. And that just created uncertainty.
And there is a lot of uncertainty because the marketplace has changed so much. There's satellite radio. There's cable television. There's satellite television. And there's the internet. Once upon a time, if I remember correctly, these rules were generally set up to protect children. We don't want children exposed to the bad language, the sexual images, the gratuitous violence, etc. Now what? With the internet, with right. Satellite and cable television? Wow.
Well, it's a classic case of the law not keeping up with technology. And that happens in a lot of different parts of our society, but nowhere more prominent than in the media industry where things change so drastically. You know, by way of example, if our listeners right now picture their living room and they pictured six different monitors in their room, you know, six different flat screen TVs.
Sure.
All right, one of them's got a DVD showing on it. One of them's got the Dish Network, okay, so satellite TV. One of them's got cable TV from Comcast. The other one's got broadcast TV from CBS. Then the other one's hooked to an iPad that's going over a Wi-Fi network that's doing it. But they're all showing the exact same program. If you're a judge and you're trying to interpret today's case law, you have to actually figure out how the signal's getting delivered to those sets, not what's showing on the sets, to figure out whether it's permissible for that show to be carried at that time of the day. It makes no sense when, as you describe, you know, my daughters can watch the same exact program over five different devices that they have right in my house today.
It is extraordinary. Let's talk a little bit more about the FCC. Everybody's familiar with that, the Federal Communications Commission. How does it work? We know there's a board or there's a commission, and they make rules. But how does it interact with Congress? How does all of that work?
Well, the FCC gets their authority from Congress. So we have the Constitution, of course, at the top. Then we have these statutes that come down and try to dictate what the FCC can and can't do. But as an agency, they're charged with enforcing those statutes. So in this case, we have kind of a general dictate that if you're using broadcast spectrum, which we, you know, you use the word scarcity. There was kind of a scarcity of spectrum out there. So the idea is, because CBS gets a license to use this spectrum, the government now has a right to regulate that and regulate what you can say. By the way, it's the only case that I'm aware of where when you license something, you give up your free speech rights, your First Amendment right to say what you want. It's very unique in the legal parlance to have that scenario.
Now, let's talk about the spectrums. That's AM, for instance, mm-hmm. A3O on your AM dial. Mm-hmm. FM, two properties that CBS owns, Jack 104.1 and Light 102.9. There are, because of HD radio, some sub-channels there. And then, of course, CBS owns Channel 4, which now broadcasts a digital frequency a little bit higher up than the old VHF. But there's VHF and UHF, and I think everyone's abandoned VHF now. Mm-hmm. That pretty much everyone's on UHF broadcasting digitally, with some exception for low-power outlets, religious programming, right, et cetera. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much the public airwaves.
That's it. That's exactly right. And you know what's interesting is during the daylight hours, 6 a.m. to 10 p.m., that's when these indecency rules that the FCC is charged with enforcing, that's when they kick in. But right now, if you were on the radio at 11 o'clock tonight, arguably you could say whatever you want. The fact is you don't, right? I mean, because your employer doesn't want you, because you have advertisers that would be upset if you used foul language. You have the general public that has a view of this station and what you produce. So the idea that the FCC actually still has to regulate you when you're competing with all these other media outlets, satellite radio, you know, internet radio, a number of different places people can get their information, why is it that you at CBS have to be limited in what you can and can't say? Why doesn't the marketplace dictate that? And if Steve Thompson, on behalf of his employer, uses improper language, then the viewers will react and stop listening to you.
Now, every company I've worked for, and I've been with this company for a long time, there is standards. There's no question there's standards, there's training, etc. Because at the end of the day, the license could be on the line mm-hmm. if something goes awry. So it is very important for all these companies that operate television, as we pointed out, VHF, UHF now, on the television side, and AM and FM on the radio side. Everyone wants to protect their license. So the FCC has jurisdiction. A lot of people wonder, why doesn't the FCC have some sort of jurisdiction over satellite, for instance? DirecTV, Dish, are the operators on satellite, or for cable operators like Comcast, Time Warner, etc., all the biggies around the country that operate on cable.
Right.
Why isn't there any jurisdiction there?
Well, and you kind of hit on the point. I mean, your company puts out standards, and regardless of what the FCC says, CBS can put out standards and dictate what you can and can't say. My employer, Mawson Barnett, has the right as an employer to tell me what I can and can't say. They're a private entity.
But or what they want you to wear to work, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. They can, you know, they can set the rules. As a matter of fact, Tom Schreier, who usually sits in this chair, he's the man. He'll tell us what can and can't happen. But,
sure.
But the reason you guys are held to a different standard is because of something called state action. It's a legal term which basically means the government's involved. So because the government licensed you your spectrum, that then gets their hooks into you and gives them the right. So, you know, we have to distinguish here between CBS setting a standard based on advertisers and viewer preferences and what the market they're going after. That's private. But here you have CBS setting standards because the government, the FCC, is dictating what you can and can't say.
Sure.
So their standards have to comply with that. That's unique. And, for example, Star Tribune has no such limitations. Now, you don't see controversial stuff in there in terms of, you know, nudity or curse words. You don't see it in the Star Tribune because they're not held to the same high standard as the broadcast industry, because the courts have viewed that as not a scarce product and one that people can invite into their homes or not. They still have the view that we have no ability to prevent WCCO or CBS broadcast television from coming into our home. You guys are an intruder, so we hold you to a different standard because you're public broadcasters.
All right, there's a lot of ambiguity out there, and we're going to talk about what happened in federal court this summer. We're going to get a better feel for what's going on, because the sense is for all media companies that operate in this public spectrum, AM, FM television, over-the-air television, people aren't really sure what they can and can't do. So we'll get into that coming up in a moment. We need to take a break. Sounds good. 11:17. Brian Grogan in. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Moss and Barnett, a history of excellence. Did you know Jesse Van Valkenburg opened his law office at 236 Hennepin Avenue in 1896? Leaving Moss and Barnett with a legacy of professionalism that we honor from our offices on the 48th floor of the Wells Fargo Center in the heart of Minneapolis.
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Traffic and weather together on the 8th, weekday mornings on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Saturdays between 11 and noon. Tom Schroyer is away. We're visiting with Brian Grogan, a shareholder and director with Moss and Barnett, practicing in the firm's communications, business law, and infrastructure practice group. Brian, we're talking about what you can and can't do on over-the-air radio and television. The rules are completely different. The FCC clearly has no jurisdiction when it comes to satellite or cable programming, or for that matter, satellite radio or what goes on the Internet. There are some that think that maybe the FCC should have some say in that content, but I think the genie's out of the bottle. I mean, at the end of the day, is there any way to go back? Is there any way to have government involvement in regulating what's available out there?
Well, the problem is it's like holding Jell-O in your fingers. I mean, once you go down that road and you start trying to regulate those different mediums, you're in big trouble. And those industries have put up strong fights over the last 10 years. Every time Congress has tried to adopt some kind of indecency standard, they put it as part of the Telecommunications Act of 96, it was challenged and it was shot down. And, you know, the industry, I think their position is, we're First Amendment speakers. What gives you the right to tell us what we can and can't say?
All right, let's talk about what's going on in the courts right now. There are a number of incidents over the years that have come to the fore. Janet Jackson and the wardrobe malfunction comes to mind at the Super Bowl as maybe being the biggest case that comes to mind, but there have been others. Award shows seem to be a lot of live programming. Now I think every bit of live programming is on some sort of digital delay, where you're not actually seeing it live, you're seeing it typically 7 seconds later on.
Right.
For instance, we have a delay here. Most talk radio stations, I can't imagine there is one anywhere in the country that doesn't have some sort of digital delay. Television as well, and that's because of these high-profile incidents.
Right, and this is actually a consolidation of a couple of different cases. And, you know, the nature of these things is it takes years to wind through the courts. This has been already up to the Supreme Court once, kicked back down on a procedural issue. Now, this summer, the Supreme Court finally accepted two cases, and they're going to revisit this entire issue. And, the hope is that they're going to reassess the standard. But the facts that come to these cases are a couple. One relates to a broadcast of NYPD Blue, where they showed
years ago.
This was back in the early 2000s, where they showed Dennis Franz, I think, without any shorts on. And they, you know, in the FCC's view, they hovered on that a little bit too long, and they thought that was indecent. Another one of these fact scenarios occurs when Bono, who's the lead singer for U2, won an award. I think it was at an American Music Awards, and he used the F word.
Yeah.
And he thought it was just blank brilliant. You know, and he said it as more of an adjective than in using the word in an improper way, supposedly, if there is a proper way to use that word. But nevertheless, complaints went wild at the FCC, and so they slapped a sanction down on that broadcast. And there's other examples. Nicole Richie was on a show with...
And there was a string of inappropriate or bad language or banned language.
Exactly. She was up there with Paris Hilton. I think they had a popular show, The Simple Life. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess.
I know. I heard that was your favorite show at the time, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I have it all on DVD.
You bought the seasons, right?
Yeah, if there's not a ball game on, I pop that in.
Well, they were up there receiving some award, and they were having a little banter. And, of course, they pre-write this banter, right? They script that out, so you're supposed to kind of follow the script.
Yeah, cue cards, typically.
Exactly. And of course, Nicole, she ad-libbed, and she deviated from it. And she used one word right away. She used the S word.
And they dropped that.
They beeped that one. But while the guy was beeping that one, she threw out another S word, and she threw out the F word, and they didn't catch those. And so in the end, they were in violation. And what the FCC has a phrase they use for these. They call them excited utterances. So in the case of a live show, you win an award, it slips out.
Or at a ball game, for instance. During the course of an NFL game, they have mics right down on the field. This is hand-to-hand combat. There can be bad language.
Yeah, I understood that Kevin Garnett occasionally let that
yeah,
happen.
Yeah, I think so. Even if there were kids sitting in the front row at Target Center or now in
And the Timberwolves
Boston,
used to try to try to coach him to say, you got to lay off that a little bit. And so all of these broadcasters have to try to hit that switch. It sometimes happens. They call it an excited utterance. You used to get by with that before this year 2000 change of theory. But now the FCC has this view that it's an initial blow, they call it. In other words, if a kid hears that on TV, let's assume it's an 8-year-old kid at home watching the Timberwolves game, hears that word, the initial blow of hearing that word, apparently for the first time in his life on that broadcast channel, that is why the FCC feels they have to act.
Well, and you could argue in this day and age, in 2011, with the internet, with cable television or satellite, depending on how television's delivered into one's home, what is it, almost 70% in this market get it via cable or satellite, which is one of the lowest in the country.
Nationwide, that average is about 87% of all households have either a satellite TV or a cable TV.
All right, so chances are they've stumbled across that at one point in time on another channel, on the cable or satellite. Or for that matter, one could argue kids in elementary school are probably hearing that language on the bus or at school. Well, so this is 2011.
Right, and the justices even recognized that in an earlier case, again, kicked on procedural issues. They said, in the old days, broadcast TV, in 1975 when this law was drafted, you were watching really three channels, right? You had the big three broadcasters, and that's what you were watching at home. Now you're wired into those broadcasters and 400 other channels. You're one remote click away from seeing any content. And I think it was Justice Stevens that recognized that. Now, they dismissed it for other reasons, but that was the spark where the litigators in this looked at it and said, there is an interest on the court to reassess this in light of these technology changes.
All right, and we'll get into that in more detail coming up. Once again, Brian Grogan joining us in studio from Moss and Barnett. Should the government censor indecent broadcasts on TV and radio? That topic will continue in a moment. It is 11:29 at News Radio 830 WCCO.
From the Buick Studios, this is News Radio 830 WCCO.
It is 11:34, Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Burnett. For more info on today's program and all our other programs, including podcasts, moss-barnett is the website, moss-barnett.com. Once again, Brian Grogan and Tom Schroyer is away. He'll be back next week on the program. Now, the FCC trying to figure out what to do, trying to give radio and television stations some sort of direction going forward. But as we pointed out earlier, in this current media environment, with all the competition, especially for television on cable, going forward, that's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy because I don't think anybody's going to be happy with it.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting to think about. In the year 2000, we had George Bush in office, and we had a Republican FCC. These agencies, of course, get a lot of their officials appointed by the administration in charge. So at that point, we kind of move towards putting in these newer indecency standards. Then these cases came up that we talked about. We started getting into litigation. And as I mentioned, this litigation takes years to wind its way through courts. Then, of course, we have a new administration come in. We appoint new FCC chair, new commissioners. But the FCC is still, and the Obama administration is still pushing the issue. They want the FCC to be able to control this kind of indecency. So they're actually litigating to enforce the rules that were put in place during that year 2000. To me, that's an interesting issue. And the people that are fighting against it, of course, are the industry. Fox, CBS, all the broadcasters, they're the ones fighting to try to provide greater flexibility in the content they're offering.
And that's because they're getting so much competition on the creative side, dramas, comedies, etc., from offerings on cable, if you will, or cable-based networks that are able to use language, images, etc., whatever they choose to make their creative point.
Right, and let's take a few examples. So a couple years back, we had Saving Private Ryan that finally hit the broadcast waves, right? It went through the DVD, the movie phase. Then all of a sudden, it was available for live broadcast. So plenty of stations actually dropped Saving Private Ryan because the broadcast network wanted to show it uncut. And, of course, there's graphic language in there.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
all kinds. But it is – it's an American war movie. It's patriotic. It's all those good things.
It's D-Day. The scenes of those men hitting and dying on the beach is extraordinary. I remember quotes from people who were actually there and said it was chilling how realistic it was.
Right. So some stations said, forget it. I'm going to show this uncut. And the FCC looked at that and said, that's fine. Now, of course, they never tell you in advance. You have to show it, take your chances, and then see. But now let's contrast that. I think it was PBS did a special on blues. They went through the South, and they showed live clips of blues artists.
Oh, sure,
and then
sure.
they interviewed yep. him. It won all kinds of Peabody Awards, and it was a fabulous show. Stations showed that, too, on replay. They got hit with fines because some of those, you know, 80-year-old blues artists used colorful language in describing how they came up in the industry. That was real life, real people in real interviews, as opposed to Saving Private Ryan, which, great movie, but was a fictitious movie. And yet one gets hit with a fine and one doesn't. It doesn't make sense. There's no consistency. And that's the problem for the broadcast industry. They need to know the rules.
At the end of the day, does it come down to the First Amendment? A lot of people throw that around, the freedom of speech, etc. Is that a valid argument at the end of the day, that it's kind of like they are the public airways, but in the face of all this other competition and all these other delivery platforms for content, and we've talked about that the whole hour, Does it ultimately come down to be able to compete? We need more freedom to be able to express ourselves. Our hosts, our writers, etc., whether it's radio or television, need to have the ability, if they choose, to
right.
go there.
Right. And the whole standard, again, 30 years ago, this is when it was set by the courts, 3-prong test. Scarcity, because the spectrum is limited, right? So we award these licenses, that there's a scarcity of product. That's one hook they have. Public ownership, because the public owns this stuff and we license you, CBS, to use it. It's another hook. And then the real hinge for all this litigation is pervasiveness. And that's the idea that you're an intruder in the house and that your information is accessible to children. You see that throughout the case law on this. We're always worried about protecting the kids. And if you've mentioned it several times today, our kids have access to so much different technology now and so
on
much
their phone.
On just, their phone, YouTube,
right.
Hulu,
yeah.
You know, you name it, Facebook. You can get now an awful lot of content on Facebook that is, I'm sure, questionable in the minds of some parents, but the parents probably have no idea how to even police that. So to your point, is it fair to put CBS television at a disadvantage when competing for viewers? And that's really, I think, the industry's argument right now that they're going to be presenting to the court.
How does this get sorted out? I mean, will it just kind of proceed through the courts and then ultimately it'll go to the FCC and they'll make some sort of ruling and give broadcasters a new set of guidelines? How do you see this playing out, Brian?
Well, we're at the Supreme Court now and we're at the issue. The court actually asked all the parties to brief out the First Amendment issue. Last time it was kicked on procedural. This time we will get a new First Amendment standard looking at this new media landscape that we're in. So that'll happen before the end of this year. You know, the court will take that up. When we get that standard, it may or may not prompt the FCC to adopt rules. But, you know, reading the commentary that I have, there seems to be a strong motivation towards reassessing that 1975 standard. And you can see it, Steve, even when you think about what happened a few weeks back with the video game litigation that happened, where the court, which is, let's face it, this is a conservative Supreme Court, they upheld the gaming industry's right to put out some fairly aggressive, violent content, they did not let California license it to prevent it from going to children. They said, look, this is a private industry. You can go out there and you can buy the stuff or not. And as a parent, if you're trying to protect little Johnny from it, don't let him play it on the video game at home.
And that was one of the more powerful messages that came out of the film The People versus Larry Flint. Say what you want about Larry Flint and Hustler magazine and all the litigation over the years, but at the end of the day, the courts always said, you know, no matter how foul, you know, no matter how distasteful, he has a right to publish that stuff.
Right. It's the old argument that, you know, do you let the Ku Klux Klan march in the park? You may not like their message, but you have to let them march, or you can't let the Girl Scouts march, because that would be a content-based restriction.
All right, we'll talk more about that. Brian Grogan in studio today once again. Should the government censor indecent broadcasts on TV and radio? And by the way, if you have a question or comment for Brian, feel free to call the program. The number is 651-989-9226. Toll free, 1-866-989-9226. You can also text us, 81807. That's 81807, and that is powered by Home Service Plus, an offering of CenterPoint Energy. Here on News Radio, 830 WCCO. Minutes now before noon at News Radio 830 WCCO. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. For more on today's program and all our other programs, including podcasts, go online, moss-barnett.com. Tom Schroyer returns next week in the spotlight. Representing yourself in court, is that a good idea? We'll get into that next week on Minnesota Law. Brian, back to the FCC. Indecency on the public airwaves, whether it's radio, television, going forward, it's in the hands of the Supreme Court. Also, the First Amendment comes up all the time. This whole concept of freedom of expression and interpreting that. We talked a little bit about that film, The People versus Larry Flint, and it described, no matter how raunchy, distasteful, that it is protected at the end of the day. And you kept and have been bringing up indecency. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me in the eye of the beholder. You put out those examples of Saving Private Ryan versus this documentary on jazz musicians and on PBS, of all places. That's a tough concept because, in many ways, art is in the eye of the beholder. What one person thinks is indecent or improper, another person may say, I that really meant a lot to me.
Right, exactly. Well, let's start with the First Amendment. It's, for our purposes today, it's pretty simple. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. So it's just those words that brings this whole issue up. Now, based on that, there's certain things you can say and you can't say. Certain prohibited speech always includes defamation. You can't go around telling lies about different people. That's illegal or it's basically not free speech. Child pornography, obviously. Obscenity, which is another whole issue as to how you define that. At the old Supreme Court test is, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it.
Sure.
You know, of course.
Yeah.
Then there's statements that affect national security. There's fighting words. And then there's verbal acts such as yelling fire in a crowded theater. So those are all things that you can't do. Everything else you're supposed to be able to do. Now, the FCC has carved out this exception for indecency. And here the government, as it relates to First Amendment, they have some limited authority to make what they call time, place, manner restrictions if it's necessary to further an important government interest. It has to be very narrowly tailored, and it's supposed to hopefully be content neutral. So I know I threw a lot of different tests at you, but where that breaks down to on the Janet Jackson issue is, do they have a right to craft a standard that says something is indecent? It has to be narrowly tailored. It has to be content neutral. So they can't say, well, I don't like your outfit. It's a little too sexy. I like you wear a turtleneck instead, right? But so it has to be kind of the most limited government involvement you can have without infringing on that free speech. So it's very vague, and that's what the court is going to try to help us define now, is put together some new tests, because these tests from 30 years ago just don't work today.
Yeah, it is very difficult. When you look at certain things along those lines, you start getting into the context. Foul language in the context of a news report. If someone, a resident of New Orleans, was frustrated in the wake of Hurricane Katrina and the response from the government, whether local, state, federal government, and that makes it onto a news broadcast, is that obscene?
Well, there are certain exceptions for a bona fide newscast that are built into those rules. So there's certain exceptions there, although I suspect out of an abundance of caution, you know, your radio station would probably still try to beep that or edit it out.
No doubt.
Yeah. But a good example of that is on the 9/11, there was a really quite famous documentary put together that showed actual footage of firefighters going up the stairs and dealing with the issues. Okay, very traumatic. As you can appreciate, some, you know, clever language was being used at the time because they were in an emergency panic situation. These are firefighters doing their job. The documentary didn't want to edit that out. It showed it in real time, actually, as it occurred. That award show went on, or that show went on to win all kinds of awards. But about 30% of the broadcasters in the country wouldn't show it during the 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. time period for fear that the FCC would actually hit them with sanctions. And yet, as a viewer, I certainly would be interested in watching that. That was a time in life that you and I will never forget. Right. It's important history. And you really can't say that a couple of words thrown out by a firefighter make that something that we're not entitled to see.
What about things that could be considered obscene or indecent in the context of educational programming, a talk show, medical talk, doctors, therapists, etc., can start to cross a line of what some might say, wow, I don't think I want my kids hearing this.
Well, it's funny you ask that because in the federal court case leading up to this, one of the judges, you have oral arguments, right, in these cases where you have the two attorneys stand side by side and they argue the merits of their case. One of the judges asked the attorney representing the FCC, if we had a show on breast cancer that was teaching teenagers ways in which to do early detection and how to care for themselves and those kind of things, purely educational health awareness.
Right.
Would that pass the FCC's indecency standard? And the attorney answered, I suspect it would. And in the actual written opinion, the judge said, in a multi-billion dollar industry trying to provide programming for the benefit of society, I suspect is simply not going to cut the mustard. That is simply not a sufficiently secure standard for the broadcasters to base their judgment on. Because in one case, something involving a female breast could be viewed as indecent, whereas another case
could
be involved an educational purpose. And the court, and this is, sometimes we don't give our judges enough credit. We think they're, perhaps a little bit older. They may not be as hip with technology. But the truth is, they get it, and I think we're going to see some changes.
We're going to take a break. We'll wrap it up. Brian Grogan in studio today. Should the government censor indecent broadcasts on TV and radio? A lot pending in the Supreme Court. We have more in a moment. News Radio 830 WCCO.
You can follow WCCO on Twitter. The latest news, sports updates, and much more. Follow us today at WCCO Radio.
Welcome back one more time. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. Brian Grogan in studio today. Final segment, should the government censor indecent broadcasts on TV and radio? And there's no doubt the FCC over the years has, but going forward, we could get a little bit more definition. We've only got about a minute, Brian. What's going to happen going forward?
What we're going to have is the industry and the FCC are going to brief this case out to the Supreme Court. There will be another set of oral arguments, so maybe I'll have a chance to come and visit with you and you know, on a morning show sometime and explain what happened there. Because you get a good sense when you hear the Supreme Court oral arguments of the direction they're heading. It'll be curious when you think of the conservative nature of the court, where they'll come down on this. But ultimately, they'll issue a decision, and then it'll be up to the FCC to react about whether they're going to draft new rules or not.
All right, and give radio and television broadcasters more direction going forward, because right now, who knows? It's almost a case by case, kind of a roll of the dice.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
All right, Brian, great to see you. Enjoy the summer, and we will talk again soon. Next week, Tom Scheuer is back, and in the spotlight, is it a good idea to represent yourself in court? We'll talk about that next week on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnetta, News Radio 830 WCCO.